the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. The Challenge of Transdisciplinary Science. A production of the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards. Episode 1, Bionades.
Hello, my name is Randolph Ashton. I'm an assistant professor in the Biomedical Engineering Department here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and my lab and research are done within the Bionates theme within the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery. So what is a Bionate? Bionate is an acronym that stands for Bio-Nanocomposite Tissue Engineering Scaffolds. And what that means is understanding how the body provides different cues in order to instruct cells to become a particular tissue type. So let's start from the beginning. When you are first conceived, you're essentially a ball of embryonic stem cells. And those cells have the potential to become any of the 220 plus cell types within your body. Now, they all have the same essential instructions on how to do that. However, because of where they are placed within the embryo and how they are exposed to different environments as the body begins to develop, they become different cell types. So one stem cell will become a neuron, which can reside within your nervous tissue. One stem cell may become a muscle, and another stem cell may become skin. Again, they all have the same instructions, but depending on the cues or the different ways that the body provides those instructions to the cell, they will become different types. And so what we seek to understand in the Bionates theme is what those cues are and can we recapitulate them in a synthetic environment outside of the body so that when we use stem cells in the petri dish, we can then provide those instructions and guide them to particular tissue types. The theme itself is constructed of a diverse group of scientists. The leader of the theme, Li-Sheng Tung, or Tom Tung, is a polymer extrusionist. And that basically means when you go to the grocery store or to Costco and you see different items that are made of polymers in different shapes, well, the way that we can make those different shapes is through a process called molding or polymer extrusion activities. What do I mean by a polymer? Basically, any type of plastic material that you use is made of a polymer. To get those polymers into particular shapes, whether it be an action figure, whether it be a cup, those are actually mass produced through a polymer extrusion process so that they come out as that shape. Essentially, you make a mold and you put the polymer into that mold. You heat it up so it melts and conforms to that mold, and then you take it out and it's the shape that you desire. As we make those polymers of different shapes, they have different mechanical properties, they have different points of weakness. You can also engineer the chemistry of those polymers to perform different functions. And so in Tom Tung's lab, he addresses all of these issues and studies, particularly within the theme, how we can make polymers and which essentially act as scaffolding, similar to the scaffolding of a building, how you can make those structures that we can place cells inside of those scaffolds, and the cells will then form a tissue around those scaffolds. So it's really a 3D physical structure for which the cells can sit in, reside in, and start to make their own environment inside of, much like a honeycomb for a bee's nest. These scaffolds essentially are the housing for the stem cells. And we can see the stem cells inside those scaffolds, and they can proceed to produce a tissue, much like muscle or a nervous tissue, inside of those scaffolds. And so in Li-Sheng's group, they would provide that basic housing and support for the tissue network. Now, the other PIs or principal investigators or scientists within the groups, such as myself, work to understand how we can then take that bare scaffold, much like you see the steel scaffold of a building, and decorate it so that it provides instructions to the cells so they think they're either in a muscle or they think they're in a nervous tissue or they think they're in skin tissue, for example. Sarah Gong is another PI within the group, and she works on how to, in a controlled fashion, release soluble growth factors. And what that means is when a cell or a tissue is forming, the cells themselves release small molecules which can diffuse through a liquid space and signal to other cells. Much like if you were playing baseball, you were the third baseman, and the ball was hit to you, And that ball is the small molecule, and you then throw that to first base to make the out. Well, that ball being the small molecule, and you are the cell, when you throw that ball to the first baseman, you're transporting a small molecule to the first baseman. And so this is similar as to how cells can communicate with one another. They can actually secrete these small molecules, and it can diffuse through the liquid space within your tissue and be received by another cell. So Sarah Gong works on how to have control release of these small molecules within different regions within the scaffolds, or using the building analogy, within different rooms within the building, and how you can specifically target some of these small molecules to different cell types. So if within your tissue you have one area that you want to be muscle, or one area that you want to be nervous tissue, can you build a carrier for your small molecules so only the muscle cells will be able to receive that signal? And can you build another carrier so only the nervous cells will be able to receive that signal? So she works in creating those type of devices and structures so that we can target the small molecule factors to individual cells within a complex tissue. Now, I myself work, as I said before, my name is Randolph Ashton, and in my lab, we work with understanding how we can decorate these scaffolds with particular non-soluble molecules that would be molecules that essentially are immobilized to the scaffold and don't diffuse through the liquid, so that they recapitulate the environment that's seen, again, within different tissues. Now, to better explain this, let me go back to describing what a tissue is. So as we've already talked about, the tissue performs the function of providing a structure for the cells to reside, and it's also remodeled by the cells themselves. So that base structure of the tissue, is really a fibrous network, much like if you were to weave a cloth and you looked at the cloth microscopically, you would see individual threads. And so that's really what the tissue sort of looks like if you zoom into it with a microscope. You have these threads of fibrous structures. Those threads would essentially be the scaffold that Li Shengtong designs. And the cells will reside within the spaces between those threads, and they will provide the soluble signals, which Sarah Gong works on. And I work more closely with the immobilized signals, molecules that are attached to those threads and don't diffuse freely within the liquid phase of the tissue. And so every tissue, muscle, skin, nervous tissue, has different decorative molecules on the actual scaffold, immobilized to the scaffold. And so we seek to understand how we can engineer those molecules and then attach them to scaffolds such as the one that Tom Turing's lab creates, so that we can make the cells believe that they're again sitting within a muscle tissue or a nervous tissue. And not only sitting within that tissue, but actually will provide instructive cues to the cells so that they would differentiate into these specific cell types, again, possibly muscle, nervous, or skin tissue. So the general theme of the BioNATES area within the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery is understanding how you can rationally engineer materials in order to instruct and direct stem cell fate, so you can use those materials in combination with stem cells to actually grow tissue-like structures outside of the body. So in the general field of tissue engineering, especially with human stem cells, there always needs to be some tempering of the potential of the field. The field has enormous potential. For example, if you were a war veteran and lost your leg, in theory, the stem cells along with scaffolds would be able to recreate your leg. However, in practice, we are just scratching the surface of understanding how to do that. So we, in regenerative medicine, can very efficiently, in most cases now, and there still needs to be some optimization of these protocols, but we can differentiate the stem cells into particular cell types, whether it be muscle cells, nervous cells, skin cells, blood cells, pancreatic cells that could possibly be used to cure diabetic patients. We can generate a lot of those different cell types that you find throughout the body using differentiation protocols that are based upon developmental biology principles. The biologists really have done an extremely good job over the past decade or so with elucidating those protocols and different molecules that you can use in a culture outside the body in order to generate those cell types. Now, whenever we do these protocols, however, it's still at the point where you can't control your culture well enough to tell every cell that it should become the cell type you want. So if you start off with 100 stem cells and you want to end up with 100 muscle cells, that currently is not possible. You end up more likely with somewhere around 30 to 60 muscle stem cells. So it's about a 30 to 60% efficiency. For other cell types, it can be as low as 10% efficiency. And then again, for other cells, it may be as high as 70 to 80%. So it's pretty variable, and we're still trying to understand exactly how to recapitulate the proper instructive cues in a culture dish in order to properly and have highly efficient protocols to derive different cell types. Now, so that's just deriving the cell types. Now it gets even more complicated when you try to form a tissue, because tissues are generally made of multiple cell types that are spatially localized and segregated. For example, within any tissue in your body, you have capillaries or arteries that carry blood. And every tissue in your body has to have these capillaries within approximately 100 microns of each other, because there's a limitation for the diffusion of oxygen, which cells need in order to survive. So to create any tissue, you have to have this vascular structure of these capillaries, along with the other 5 or 10 cells, different cell types that are required to make a tissue that performs the functions that we naturally think of within the body. So how do you spatially segregate these cells? How do you design environments so maybe you could possibly seed the entire scaffold of a tissue with stem cells, but then engineer different regions of that scaffold so that they can, in different spaces, create different cell types? That is very much at the forefront of regenerative tissue engineering. And so that's where we're currently investigating. So how long will it take to arrive at the point where we can actually generate these tissues? Essentially, if you provide the structure and decorate the rooms within the structure, the building scaffold, for example, with the proper cues, how long before we can just seed those scaffolds with cells and actually get in one area muscle tissue, in another area capillary or vascular type tissue that you would need to create, for example, a muscle? And the answer to that, any sane scientist sort of prognosticates 10 years in the future. It's sort of the standard reply you hear when people ask, FDA officials, how long before we can use this? But the real answer is we actually don't know. Every day we learn more about what are the limiting amount of factors that you have to provide, the limiting instructive cues you have to provide to the cells before the program within the cells is sort of steered in the right direction and the cell can carry out the rest of the functions. For example, we could know that if you were trying to create a muscle cell, that within muscle tissue, the muscle provides 100 instructive cues to allow that cell to know that it should become a muscle. But do we only need to provide 10 of those cues, or do we need to provide all 100 before the stem cell knows that it should travel down the path to become a muscle cell? That we don't know. And we are constantly surprised sometimes by transplantation studies with different early stage cell types that are derived from stem cells. When you implant them, how much the cell actually already knows where it should become. So we don't know if there are 10 steps to differentiating a stem cell into a muscle cell. We don't know if you need to first provide the cues to go through the first 2 steps and then the cell can perform the rest of the 8 by itself, or if you need to provide all 10 steps. So the answer to how long until we can have these therapies ready is really unknown. It could be within 5 years, could be within 10 years. The other question you have, though, is right now within the FDA and the powers that be in the government that regulate medical technologies and the use of medical devices within the clinic, that regulation framework is being developed. So there is no clear path, and hasn't been for a while, and the stem cell community of scientists actually have been pushing the government to make these type of regulatory frameworks so that we can very rapidly, or as efficiently as possible but still be safe about it, go from a discovery within the academic field to actual clinical implementation. That is a whole nother side of stem cell policy that people focus on, and it's currently also being worked out. So the take-home message, if you were interested in the BioNates theme within the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery, is that we're a group of scientists who essentially are taking some of the stem cell technology that is created by biologists and understanding how we can use that knowledge along with some very cool engineering techniques in order to create tissues outside of the body. And this would not lead to creating an entire human being, but simply how can we create tissues that could be used for maybe transplantation of liver tissue or heart tissue to treat a patient. In the more foreseeable future, it will be how you create tissues for drug discovery research, for modeling diseases. For example, if a patient has a disease, a neurodegenerative disease, often in these diseases, a specific cell type within their tissue is selectively degenerated. In Parkinson's disease, that would be dopaminergic neurons, for example. So stem cell technology has advanced to the point where we can actually take a skin sample from you, regenerate stem cell-like cells from that skin sample, and then differentiate those cells in a culture into motor neurons or dopaminergic neurons. And we also want to move forward into differentiating those cells and recreating the neural tissue environment in which those exist within your body, because the diversity of cells within those neural tissue environments also provide instructive cues and sometimes provide toxic cues to the selective neurons that are degraded in some of these diseases. So in the tissue engineering theme or the Bionates theme within the WID, we seek to create these tissues that could also be used for disease modeling to give us a better handle instead of using rodent models to use actual human tissues in order to look at how the disease initiates and propagates throughout different tissues.
This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards, sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery.